Hey, this is Steve, and this podcast is all about making the gospel relevant to your life. That means discovering the good news of Jesus, no matter what you're going through today. Nehemiah was a great example of a leader. He was able to relentlessly stick to his vision until it was fully accomplished. That's not like us. We tend to give up and give out very easily. But Nehemiah knew how to stick to it. And we can learn a very, very valuable principle from him about how to accomplish our great work. So we wrap up this message series today, this series that we've been talking on vision for the last few weeks and trying to hold on to and retain our vision despite the daily grind of our lives. And we've been saying that vision is for you, right? It's for you. Vision's not some mystical, magical, secret thing that only some person have. Vision's a preferred future. It's a preferred future. It's the ability to clearly see, to have a clear picture. Here's the definition: to have a clear picture of what could be. Sorry about this. To have a clear picture of what could be with the conviction that it should be. A clear picture of what could be with the conviction that it should be. Vision is for you. You, in fact, first blank on your page is you are a person of vision. Who is? That was terrible. Who is a person of vision? You are a person of vision. You are a person of vision. Why? Because the gospel, right? Because the gospel, because at one time you were blind. You had no vision. You couldn't see anything. You were blind and you were dead. You were crippled in your sin, and all you could hope to do was to exist, floating through this life for 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years, and then end. You were going to just simply end, because all of us are sinners, crippled and broken and dead in our sin, blind, and the wages of sin, the result of sin in our life is death. So all we had was blindness and death. That's all we had, but God had a better vision for you, and God saw you with him. God didn't see you separated from him forever in death. He saw you living with him. And so God sent Jesus to enter that holy city on Palm Sunday and to spend a week there. And at the end of that week, go to the cross. And on the cross, all of your sin and all of my sin was placed onto Jesus, who paid for our sin. He took our punishment for us. He paid the price. And he died in our place. And 3 days later, he rose again. And he lives now in you and in me to give us a better vision so that we can live for something much, much bigger than this world. We don't just exist and float through this life, but we were put here on purpose. We were put here for God's purpose. And so every day, every moment, we live on his purpose. That's why I say that you are a person of vision. Sure, you're going to have trouble reaching your goals and your visions. Sure, you're going to have trouble apprehending your dreams. Of course you are. But Scripture clearly tells us that our light and momentary troubles here in this world are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. It says that we instead fix our eyes on what, not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. We fix our eyes. We hold fast to the bigger vision that Jesus brings us. We look beyond this life. We aren't settled for the possessions and the devices and the objects and the schedule and the demands. We have fixed our eyes on something better. Not on what is seen, but what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. That's why Jesus says, I've come that you might have abundant life. It's not just about having life out there somewhere one day. It's about you living for a purpose now. That's what Jesus brings into our life. He created us for his purposes. We've looked at this verse every week, Ephesians 2:10. You are his masterpiece. created anew in Christ Jesus so that we can do the good things that he planned for us long ago. God's put you here because God has a vision for you, and you are a person of vision. Now, I heard from one of our life groups, an elderly group. They said, well, we're all in our 70s and we don't really need to have vision anymore. You know, we're kind of past that. We're kind of beyond that. And now our life is just slowing down and we're just going to enjoy our final golden years, I guess. And I hope that is not true for you, because I believe that is a lie from Satan right there. You, I don't care how young you are or how old you are designed by God to live every single day on purpose with vision here in this world. Scripture is really clear about that. Proverbs 29 says that where there is no vision, the people perish. Just want to be really clear. Where there's no vision, King James tells us that the people perish. Perish. Think about that. Perish means to die. That's the same thing as the wages of sin is death. God is telling us that it is a sin to be a person without vision. You are sinning against him, and the wages of sin is death. That's what he's lining up for us here. My dad is going to be 81 years old in May, 81 years old. And just a few Sundays ago, he was here a couple of weeks ago, just a few Sundays ago, my dad retired for the third time. He was a pastor all his life, not a pastor like I am. He's not kind of a teaching pastor. My dad was a pastoral care pastor. So he worked at a mega church, and he was the pastoral care guy. What that means is at a giant, giant church, it was very common for my dad for decades of his life to visit half a dozen to a dozen people in the hospital, to always be meeting people at their worst moments. Can you imagine how draining that is to just always be in the hospital with sick, maybe dying people? It was very common for him, on top of that, to do two or three funerals any given week. Oh, there's nothing that's emotionally draining more than to walk with a family through the grieving process of their loved ones. And he would also do some weddings sprinkled in here and there. But he just poured his life out. And then at that mega church, they had a mandatory 65 retirement age, and he was grateful when that day came and he retired, moved up to Franklin, North Carolina, where they asked him to pastor the First Baptist Church of Franklin. So after retirement, he took another career move, another job, and he pastored that church into his 70s. And he said, I'm kind of getting on up there. I need to slow it down a little bit. So he retired again. And then there was a little country church just outside of town. And they said, hey, we just need an interim pastor. Can you come and can you fill in for us for 6 months? Just be an interim pastor for 6 months. And he said, okay, I'll come there for 6 months. And 7 years later, he gave his retirement announcement to the church about 5 or 6 weeks ago now. And you know what he's doing now? He's about to turn 81 years old. And he's not saying, well, I don't have to have vision. I'm done. I visited thousands in the hospital. I did hundreds of funerals. I performed hundreds of weddings. And now I've done a lot and I'm done now. That's not what he's doing. He's about to turn 81 years old. I'll tell you what he's doing now. He's got this theological library that he's amassed over the years. And he, at 80 years old, is finding young, untrained, bivocational ministers, and he's giving his theological library away to them, and he's mentoring them so that they can become better faster. Come on, he is living with vision. He's living with purpose. He's not just breathing and existing. He is here for God's purposes in this world. Let me ask you a question. What's your vision? What's your vision? You're probably not 80 years old. Maybe you are. What's your vision? Where is God leading you? What has he put you here to do? There's something that God has given you that only you can do. Leah, you can't outsource raising Levi. right? You can't outsource that. You can't just hand that off to somebody else. God's given you that responsibility. Aaron, he's given you that responsibility. You too are Levi's parents, and nobody else can speak for God into Levi's life better than you. And so you are in charge of raising that little boy to become the godly young man that God wants him to be. That's on you. Nobody else, that's on you. That's your wall that you're building. It's a big deal, right? Am I right? It's a big deal. Some of you guys have been through this, right? Maybe now you don't have a little infant anymore. Maybe now you got a 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 year old, and they're just the joy of your life. See, us old folks laugh because we know they're a holy terror when they're that age. Am I right? And some of you guys, listen to me. Some of you guys are raising those kids and you're doing the best you can, and it's hard work, right? It's really difficult, and it's hard to stay on that because day after day after day, that little 8-year-old will grind you down, right? You got job responsibilities and all kinds of other stuff, and you're just doing the best you can to reclaim and to hold on to that vision. What's your vision? Is it raising that kid? Is it starting that business? Is it getting that ministry launched, or that not-for-profit? What's your vision? Maybe it seems like it's really, really big and beyond you, and it probably is if it's a God vision. Maybe it feels really small, but it's still beyond you. Like maybe your vision is to become debt-free, right? Maybe your vision is just to stop smoking. You've been talking about it for years, and you've been saying you're gonna stop, you've been saying you're gonna quit, but you know, you had a New Year's resolution in 2005 that you were gonna stop, and you didn't stop. You're still smoking today, right? And maybe that's your vision. Maybe it's to get back in shape again, right? I mean, can anybody agree with me that it's time to get back in shape again? Yeah, but we don't do it. We talk about it. We talk about these visions. We know they're out there. We know God's given us that and only us that, but we just can't do it. We just can't quite get there. You know why? It's because there's so many other demands, so many other things, so many things that capture our attention and our time that we invest into those things, and we can't say yes to the best thing, right? Because the next blank on your page, vision comes with a cost. Vision always comes with a cost. Vision isn't cheap. It's expensive. It's hard. And you can't just hope one day you'll just quit having cravings for the nicotine. You can't just hope one day you'll just quit wanting the illicit substances. You can't just hope one day that everything's going to be better in your life. It always comes with a cost. So we talked last week about how we've got to learn to say no to good things in our lives, so that we can say yes to God's best in our lives. Did you hear that last week? Were you here for that? Okay, 3 of you were over here. Good. You're my crew. Help me out. So we talked about the discipline of saying no to good things, because there's a lot of good things that want you, that are barking at you, telling you that you need to do something else besides your vision, and You got to learn to say no sometimes to good things so that you can say yes to the best thing in life. But the problem with that is that we're chickens. You know, that we're kind of pansies about it. And we aren't good at saying no to good things. Excuse me. So we talked about that last Sunday. When did we talk about it?
Last Sunday.
So 7 days ago, right? It was Sunday. Say no to good things, say yes to God's best thing. And then Monday happened. A lot of you guys walked out of here on Sunday. I'm going to say no to good things, but I'm going to say yes to the best. And then Monday happened. And I'll tell you how awesome I am. I know that God, one of the things God's given me is he's called me to preach here at the Orchard Church. And I can't outsource that, right? I just can't give that away. Now, there's times when Jason fills in or we bring in somebody. We got Frank Beeler coming in May. He's going to be speaking on Family Day. It's going to be awesome. You know, I've got guest speakers come in every now and then, and that's great. But I'm the preacher here, and God's called me to do that. I can't just give that away, and I take that responsibility seriously. I want you to know I take this serious. I don't cheat on this. So what I do is I block out time in my schedule. And if you want a meeting with me, you can't get with me on Tuesday. I mean, I got Mondays meeting days and Wednesdays are meeting days, but Tuesday, I block that day off and I'm prepping for Sunday. or I'm tying up loose ends from last Sunday. I'm focused in on the preaching responsibility that God's given me. You can get with me on Thursday morning, but you can't get with me on Thursday afternoon. I've blocked that time off to study, to pray, to read, and to write. I'm getting ready for Sunday. I take it seriously. That's the best thing, one of the best things that God's called me to do. So I do that, and I don't joke around about it until Monday. So we have staff meeting on Monday, and it's meeting after meeting after meeting all day. And we're a little short-staffed right now on our staff, and we've got some big projects that we've been working on. We just had our closing ceremony on top of the hill on the weekend this past Friday. How about that? That was awesome, wasn't it? Yeah, it was really cool to be up there in our land, but you know, there's a lot of logistics that, you know, on Monday at staff meeting, I was kind of taking a lot of the, okay, I'll do that. I'll make sure the trash cans are there and the bags are in them, and I'll carry the tables over. And you know, I was just making my list of things I would do. And not only that, but we got another little, something's happening next Sunday. What, something is going on next Sunday too, kind of a project. Easter. Yeah, so we got some big stuff going on. And on top of that, Monday just seemed like there was a lot of demands. I got to get to this meeting. I got to do this other thing. There were a lot of other people that were kind of barking and saying, I need this, I need that. And I kind of gave a lot of time away. And by the end of Monday, I had scheduled out my week. And I had scheduled out my study time. I didn't have hardly any left. And so it's about 3:00, 4:00 in the afternoon. We're in the lobby in the office and Bruce is there. And I'm talking to Bruce. I'm like, dude, I'm locked down now. I'm locked down. I've got every hour scheduled between now and the party. I can't schedule in anything more. So if there's more tasks, problems come up, or people want to meet, the answer is no, I can't do it. I've got to say, you know, yes to the, I've got to prepare a message. And Marcia Stinkin' Rodriguez was standing there. And she's so quiet and unassuming, she would never say anything ugly. And she looked at me, and she pointed her finger at me, and she said, you've said yes to all the wrong things. She drove a spike right through my heart. I was like, I can't practice what I preach. And she said, yeah, now you can't say yes to, she said, I need you to preach on Sunday. And now you can't do that effectively. And I was like, yes, ma'am. And we had to rework some stuff because, and here's the thing for all of us, next mic on your page, this is all easy to say, but hard to live. It's all super, super easy to say, but hard to live. It's super easy to say, yes, I'm going to be all about the weight loss. Yes, I'm going to be all about the not smoking. Yes, I'm going to put the alcohol down. Yes, I'm going to stand for my marriage. Yes, I'm going to fight for my kids. It's easy to say that stuff, but dude, it is hard to live. So how can we stand on this? How can we climb up on our wall and stand there and say, this is mine. I will do this. I will be the person God's called me to be. How can we do that? Today, what I want to do is I want to give you a real, solid, tangible thing that if you can just stand on this, if you can just grasp this, this thing that we're going to talk about today, I think it will completely change your ability to respond when everything's barking at you and pulling you away from your vision. I think that it's going to always be easy to say and hard to live, but if you and I can wrap our heads around this one thing, I think it will really change the way you pursue God's plan for your life. Do you want that? Okay, so let's look at the example of Nehemiah once again. Nehemiah, as you know, had the vision for the wall. He wanted to rebuild the wall around his home city of Jerusalem, and he was heartbroken over it. So he prayed and prayed and prayed about it, and then after 4 months, God opened a door into a decisive moment for Nehemiah. He leaped through boldly with faith, and he asked the king for the blessing of permission and authority, and the king gave everything he asked for. And Nehemiah was sent by the king as sort of a governor into Judea to rebuild the wall of Jerusalem. Nehemiah arrives at town. He walks around, makes an assessment of the wall, knows what they got to do. He gathers all the leaders and he casts his vision. Let's rebuild the wall. And everybody gets really excited and they start off. They had some problems. Remember, some of the people kind of had difficulty with it, but they were progressing along on the wall. In fact, they were getting all the way, almost finished with the wall, and everyone was really glad that the wall was being rebuilt. Everyone, except for a few of the bad guys. There's always bad guys, right? Do you have bad guys in your life? You have bad guys that, you know, God's called you to do this thing, but there's always a bad guy pulling you in a different direction. I mean, it may be a friend or an acquaintance, maybe your boss, right? Might be a coworker. It might be someone you got a toxic relationship with, and they're the bad guy. I mean, I hate to say it, but there's bad guys in our lives that we just got to acknowledge are bad guys for us. So Sanballat is one of these bad guys. Sanballat is a local regional leader, and he's been profiting off of the broken walls. See, the economy in Jerusalem has crumbled along with the walls, and that's because Sanballat and his people have been coming in, raiding the city, pillaging, plundering, and taking money, bullying and intimidating the people of God and collecting money from them. Sanballat is a bad guy. And so Sanballat gets word that they're almost finished with the wall. And here's what happens in Nehemiah 6. Now when Sanballat, this is Nehemiah's memoirs that he's writing. He says, when Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem the Arab and the rest of our enemies heard that I had built the wall and there was no breach left in it, although up to that time I had not set up the doors and the gates, Sanballat and Geshem sent a message to me. Now, so what's happening is the wall's almost complete. No breaches, no holes in the wall left. It's all done. The only thing left is to hang the doors on the hinges, pretty much. There's just a little bit of work left to do, not much. And these guys are getting desperate because the outsiders, the bad guys, Sanballat, knows that once this wall is built and the doors are hung, this group of people are going to rebel against me. I'm not going to be able to plunder anymore. I'm not going to be able to bully anymore. I'm not going to get my way anymore. Now they're going to be able to do what they're supposed to do, and I won't be able to intimidate them. I won't make money off of them. In fact, they might even raise an army. They might even defeat me. And so Sanballat wants to stop the wall from being built. So he sends a message to Nehemiah, and here's what the message says. It says, and that's what the sound was when Nehemiah got the message. Nehemiah's like, hold on a second. Oh, it's just Sanballat. Let me just. That wasn't mine. No, it wasn't mine. Actually, you know, they didn't use these, by the way. You know how they did it. What was customary in the time was that the when they would send letters back and forth, especially when it was leaders, they would write the letter out on parchment, and then they would either roll it or fold it, and then they would seal it with clay or with wax. And that way the intended recipient receives the letter, opens it up, breaks the seal, opens it up, and reads it. And so Nehemiah gets this sealed letter, and it says this, come and let us meet together at Hakkapherem. Hakkapherem means at a small village. Come and let us meet together at Hakkapherem in the plain of Ono. So its message is like, hey, why don't you come meet with us? Why don't you come and talk to us? We just want to have a conversation. We see you're building this wall. Let's talk about this together. It sounds like a good idea for you guys. I'm not sure. Let's just talk about it. But Nehemiah saw right through this deception. They didn't want to just talk. Nehemiah says that they intended to do me harm. They intended to harm me. Nehemiah knew that they weren't just planning to harm him. They were planning to kill him. And Nehemiah knew that if they got him down off of that wall and got him to Hakkapherem, not only would he lose his life, but the vision God gave him would never get accomplished. And Nehemiah was not about to let the vision crumble. And so Nehemiah, in this powerful, powerful statement, sends word back to Sanballat. And this phrase that he uses, this declarative sentence that you already saw, Jason, is what Nehemiah sends to Sanballat, and here's what he says. I sent messengers to them saying this, I am doing a great work, and I cannot come down. That's powerful. Say it with me. I am doing a great work, and I cannot come down. That was terrible. Do it again. I am doing a great work, and I cannot come down. One more time. I am doing a great work, and I cannot come down. That's the next blank on your page. Write it down. I am doing a great work, and I cannot come down. Nehemiah knew that he was building a wall for the sake of the glory of God, and if he didn't do it, it wouldn't get done. God had called him to do that, and he was going to be obedient to God, not to Sanballat. He says, I am doing a great work, and I cannot come down. What's your great work? What is the vision God's planted in your life? For some of you, it's that 8-year-old holy terror. And for you, it is just all you can do. All of your energy and all of your emotion is completely taken by that 8-year-old all day long, every day. And you are just waiting for that late night moment where that kid finally goes to sleep and you finally get a breath of fresh air. And it's all you can do to not just collapse into your own bed at that point, but maybe tonight, maybe tonight, when that 8-year-old goes to bed, you need to go in there and you need to lay down beside that kid and stroke their hair, and you need to remind yourself, you need to say it out loud, I am doing a great work and I cannot come down. Because that's the vision that God's given you. That's the great work that he's called you to do. Maybe for you, it's sobriety. It's being addiction free. But every time you get around that group of people, every time you go back to that place, the tentacles of that addiction, of those illicit substances, they get right back into you and they pull you right back in. And you don't want to, it's not where you want to be, but before you know it, it's just happened again because you got around those people. Maybe next time the invitation comes to get with that group, you need to take a stand and say, I am doing a great work and I cannot come down. Some of you guys are crippled by debt and you are spending 50%, 60%, 70% of your income on past bad decisions. You want to retire well? Heck, you'd just be happy to be debt-free and free up a little space in your financial life to be able to buy the stuff you need and be able to give back to God. But everything keeps calling your name. You had to have this, you had to have that. Oh, it was a legitimate expense at the time. Sure, but you can't even remember where some of that money went to. And now it's all you can do, living paycheck to paycheck, just trying to breathe a little bit. And maybe what you and your spouse need to do is to sit down and you need to look at your bills and figure out what you can cut. You don't have to have the best cable package. You don't have to have the best cell phone plan. You know, maybe you could afford to pay less rent in another location. And maybe you guys need to come up with a plan, and you together need to look at each other and say, I am doing a good work and I cannot come down. And every time that new device comes out, or every time that bigger house calls you, or every time you lust after that bigger truck, you need to say, I am doing a great work and I cannot come down. Am I right? Some of you are saying, I really want to be like Christ. I really want Jesus to come alive in me, and I just long for, you know, I watch other people. They have the worship experiences in here, you know, and I'm over in the corner and I've got tears coming down my face. There's something more real to some of us than for some of the rest of us. And some of you are going, I don't know what that is. I wish I had that. I wish it was more than just a show I came to watch on Sunday. But you haven't gotten into a life group yet. You haven't started serving on a team. Jesus said it's simple. Love God, love others, make disciples. And maybe you're just trying out the first, you're just sticking your toe in the love God part on Sunday mornings, but you're not in a group and you're not on a team. And maybe you're just too busy for that. You got too many things going on, you know, too many priorities other than God's priorities in your life. And maybe you need to take a stand and say, I am doing a great work and I cannot come down. Get with your calendar and look at your calendar and say, I am doing a great work and I cannot come down. What is the vision that God's called you and only you to? What wall do you need to build in your lives? So Nehemiah answers with this powerful statement, I am doing a great work and I cannot come down. And then it got worse. Yeah. I mean, I wish there was a simple silver bullet phrase. If you just say the magic incantation, doing a great work, cannot come down, boom, everything's great. No, it just doesn't work that way. So the next thing that happens is Sanballat kicked up his rumor mill. Look at what happens next in verse 4. So they sent to me four times this way. So four times he gets this invitation to come have coffee on the plain of Ono, and he responds, I'm doing a great work, I cannot come down. So in the same way, Sanballat, for the fifth time, sent his servant to me with an open letter in his hand. Okay, so this time it's not the same kind of letter, it's an open letter. An open letter is not rolled, not folded, not sealed. So anybody can read the contents of the letter. What's happening here is Sanballat wants to start spreading the word out. He wants other people to know what he's saying to Nehemiah. And here's what it says. He says this, it's reported among the nations, and Geshem also says it, that you and the Jews intend to rebel, you know, against King Artaxerxes, because, you know, Nehemiah, we all serve King Artaxerxes. I mean, I'm Sanballat and Geshem, we all serve King Artaxerxes. He's the king. King Artaxerxes is our king. But everybody's talking about you and about how you're trying to set up a rebellion against the king. He says, this is why you're building the wall. And according to these reports, you wish to become their king. And you have also set up prophets to proclaim concerning you in Jerusalem that there is a king in Judah. And now they're talking about it. Everybody's talking about it, Nehemiah. And look, and now the king will hear of these reports. So now come and let us take counsel together. So Nehemiah is looking like the bad guy. Now the rumors are spreading. Oh, Nehemiah is not trying to rebuild God's city. He's trying to build his own city. Nehemiah is not going in the authority of the king. He's trying to replace the king. And Sanballat's trying to make himself out like the good guy. Hey, let's get together and talk. We're all supposed to be on this whole team together. Just come talk with us and we'll get this all straightened out. Man, he's trying to get the rumor mill really going. You can't hardly fight that, can you? Once everybody's talking, it's hard to fight that. And here's what this teaches us. Next blank on your page is that vision always has resistance. Vision always has resistance. Even when you take your stand, there will still be resistance. And I love what Nehemiah does in response. In verses 8 and 9, he says, then I sent to him saying, no such things as you say have been done. You're inventing them out of your own mind. For they all wanted to frighten us, thinking that their hands will drop from the work and it will not be done. But now, O God, he says, strengthen my hands. I love what Nehemiah does here. He doesn't pull himself down into a little fight. Well, he said, she said, or yeah. He doesn't do all that. He doesn't start pointing fingers. He states his case and then he trusts God. He doesn't get down dirty, ugly. He doesn't start firing off nasty tweets. You know, he doesn't start posting, woe is me on Facebook. Everybody hates me. You know, he doesn't do that. He states his case and he trusts God. He knows that he is in God's hands as long as he's pursuing God's vision for his life. And he knows that he can't finish the wall. He knows against this type of resistance, this type of opposition, he'll never get it complete. He knows he must instead trust alone in God. And so in verse 15, that's exactly what happened. It says, so the wall was finished on the 25th day of the month of Elul in 52 days. It goes on and says, when all of our enemies heard of it, the nations around us, including Sanballat, were afraid and they fell greatly in their own esteem, for they perceived that this work had been accomplished with the help of our God. They lost confidence in themselves because they saw that God made it possible for the wall to be built. What Nehemiah learned and what we need to learn is to trust God like he did. Last blank on your page is that God alone gives the strength you need to accomplish your vision. So know your wall. Identify your wall. What has God called you to? And take a stand, a godly stand. And be a person who says, I am doing a great work and I cannot come down. State your case and trust God for the results.